Okay, good afternoon. I want to start with a few comments, if I may, about the global economy and our position within it. As you know, the finance minister is due back late tomorrow from his visit to the United States, and where he's been talking to various people about the global outlook. I'll get a full update when he gets back, but I did have an opportunity to have a chat to him over the weekend, and it's fair to say he characterised the mood as very dark. There is genuine fear that both the United States and Europe could be in for a tough time in the next 12 to 24 months. As the Reserve Bank Governor pointed out last week, the volatility in Europe and the United States is likely to reduce global growth. We are not immune from the current issues with the US and Europe, but New Zealand's position relative to many other economies is not all doom and gloom by any stretch of the imagination. This government has a plan to get our deficit and spending under control, and it's a plan we've been implementing since we came into government. You will remember where we started when we took office. If nothing had changed, we'd be facing never-ending deficits and ever-rising debt. This year is likely that we'll see government borrowing substantially reduced from around about $20 billion to $5 billion, despite the Canterbury earthquakes, and reducing further in the coming years. The actions we have taken to get the country back into surplus as fast as possible is not only the right course of action, it's the only sensible course of action available to us. Moving on to the Rugby World Cup, it was a great weekend for the tournament and of course for the All Black captain Richie McCaw, who played his 100th test for the All Blacks. Over 230,000 people attended matches over the weekend and ticket sales continue to be extremely strong. Organisation over the weekend was excellent, the Auckland waterfront area and transport ran well, and right across the country I'm advised that matches went off extremely well. Around 50,000 people visited Queen's Wharf during the day on Saturday and during the All Blacks match against France. Captain Cook's Wharf was open to handle the overflow from Queen's Wharf. We're heading towards a very special sporting weekend in New Zealand as we host some great matches in Rugby World Cup and as the Warriors go into battle in Sydney in the NRL Grand Final against Manly. For fans who can't get to Sydney, we are working on finalising plans for Aucklanders to be able to watch the Grand Final. Final details such as locations are being worked through, but it's likely that they'll be able to be announced in the next day or so. I'm pleased the cooperative approach is being taken by both the IRB, Rugby World Cup 2011, and the Auckland Council to ensure we can cater for rugby union and rugby league fans on Sunday. In the Rugby World Cup, we have more sellout crowds coming this week. The Canada versus Japan match in Napier, Italy versus Ireland in Dunedin on Sunday, and South Africa versus Samoa at North Harbour on Friday. Moving on to the search and surveillance legislation or that particular area, I'm sure you've already seen the statement by the Attorney General outlining the government's intended process on the bill to address the implications of the recent Supreme Court decision regarding covert video surveillance. Cabinet today discussed the matter and received briefings from both the Attorney General and the Minister of Police on the effect of the decision. It's clear that the decision has a serious effect on current operations involving the New Zealand Police. The offending in question is of a serious nature. It's also clear that the decision we have will have an adverse effect on a number of prosecutions currently underway. While there may be the potential to admit the video evidence in some of these trials through the Evidence Act, it still leaves prosecutors and police in the unpleasant position of having to present what has now been declared to be illegal evidence to the court and take their chances. Cabinet also received an update from the Attorney General on the extensive consultations he has conducted with other parties, the legal fraternity and other groups such as the Human Rights Commission. This has raised a number of issues, some of which the Attorney General has attempted to reflect in the bill. Others, of course, are reasonable differences of legal opinion. While the timing of this legislation has been less than ideal, it is vital that we ensure the police cameras that are currently switched off are switched back on as soon as possible. Therefore, it's our intention to introduce the legislation tomorrow under urgency and refer it to a select committee, with the committee reporting back next Monday. It would then be our intention, depending on parliamentary support, to pass the reported back bill through all remaining stages on Thursday next week. The ACT Party have indicated they will support the legislation to select committee. In terms of ministerial activity, I'm at caucus in question time. I have a meeting with the Vice President, Premier of China, who's here during the afternoon. On Wednesday, I'll be hosting the Prime Minister of Georgia, Nikolai Galauzi, for our first bilateral meeting. We'll both travel to Palmerston North to watch the match between Georgia and the Romanian teams that night. On Thursday, I'm in the Wairarapa, and then Friday, I'm in Auckland. At the weekend, I'm looking forward to going to Australia to attend the NRL Grand Final game between the Warriors and Manly. Unfortunately, this means I won't be able to attend the Rugby World Cup match being held in Dunedin on Sunday as I'd planned. Tomorrow in the House, it's the government's intention to move the second reading of the Criminal Procedure Bill and the first reading of the Taxation Annual Rates, Returns, Filing and Remedial Matters Bill. The government will then move the urgency be accorded to the introduction and first readings of the Video Camera Surveillance Temporary Measures Bill, as I just outlined, and the Sleepover Wages Settlement Bill. This will enable them to be sent to Select Committee for a short consideration, reporting back on Monday. And subject to continued support, we will aim to commence debate on the remaining stages of these bills on Thursday, the 6th of October, which is the earliest opportunity under standing orders. Returning to this week, Wednesday's Members' Day, there will be 7 valedictory statements made by retiring members this week.
What about those negotiations that you're looking at in Auckland around Home Central?
Yep.
Are you suggesting that the IRB have relaxed enough so that they'll play the rugby league within Home Central, or take a bit straight out to the street?
Yes, so the final details haven't been worked through. They are a matter of negotiation now currently between the IRB, the Council and Rugby World Cup. But I think it's fair to say that all parties try and take a very constructive approach, and I'm optimistic that we will get a solution that will work well for league fans as well as rugby fans.
So they'll be able to watch. You're confident that they'll be able to watch it in that area?
I'm confident there will be a solution that will be amicable to all parties. They're in the process of working that through, and I wouldn't want to get in front of that, but it's looking optimistic.
Are you looking at hiring new screens?
They'll work through all those details, and we'll let you know that tomorrow.
Don Bush is pushing for the idea to legalise cannabis. What do you make of that?
I think it's a step completely in the wrong direction. Look, you know, Parliament sends messages through the actions it takes, and the message that I want to send to New Zealanders is we want to see less drug taking in this country. We don't want a drug culture for our young people. And I strongly disagree with him when he says that there's no demonstrated harm. In fact, the academic evidence strongly argues that there's considerable harm from sustained use of marijuana. Well, I think we're making progress. We're ironing out the different issues. I mean, I met with the Solicitor General on Friday night. I know that there's been a number of meetings taking place. We're trying to make sure we give the parties all the relevant information. I'm very confident in the steps that we are taking, that they are the right steps. And I think what's very important to understand is it's Parliament's responsibility to set the laws. It's the Court's responsibility to interpret the laws. And that was actually really the message that came out of the Supreme Court ruling on September the 2nd. They made it quite clear that Parliament need to clarify its position. That's what the government's intending to do. So I can't guarantee we'll be able to get it out of a select committee and pass it around. I can't guarantee what form it'll be in, but I am confident that we're making good progress.
So you're relying on that potential support
for that? Well, I think it's a matter for Labor to consider as well. I mean, at the end of the day here, it's pretty straightforward. If we don't get those cameras turned back on, then we are at risk, in my view, of having a number of criminals who won't be brought to justice. There are serious cases involved here. And in my view, I think that would be a very negative step. And actually, Parliament relied very heavily and on the rulings of the Appeal Court of Appeal. I read a number of those judgments that the Crown Solicitor provided for me on Friday. And those judgments from the Court of Appeal were very clear that video surveillance was admissible. And we had no particular reason as a result of at least those decisions and the common law rulings over the last 15 years to consider that to be anything other than a lawful position.
But there's an issue with the retrospectivity of it. Is there any chance that the government's legislation will just be affecting future cases, or is that retrospective nature critical to the legislation?
Well, it's always possible that it could just simply be prospective in nature, but that would certainly have an impact on the 40-odd trials that we want to bring to court. The advice from Solicitor General to me was that 40 is on the light side, and serious cases, so we'd certainly want to see that. There are also potentially issues of people who have been convicted then taking an appeal. So that's not to be underestimated. So, of course, it's always possible it's prospective and not retrospective, but I think we need to look at both.
Will the government release the advice that's actually the detail of the advice it's received?
Look, it's not normal for us to release Crown Law opinions, but the Solicitor General has been meeting, as I understand, with other political parties. So.
My understanding is that the parties actually haven't seen a copy of the advice yet. Will it be given to them so they can make an informed decision ahead of the debate?
You have to ask the Attorney General that.
This case, was about placing hidden cameras on someone else's property.
That's right.
Without their knowledge or consent. Are you seriously saying that the common law allowed that?
Yes.
And you think that's the way it should be?
Well, all I can say to you is I'm more than happy to provide you with the court rulings that came out of the Court of Appeal. It's very, very clear and extremely detailed in nature. No.
Have you been briefed in detail on the cases where police surveillance has been turned off right now? And can you describe some of those?
Well, my understanding is that they're serious drug cases and other potential offences that would lead to potentially life imprisonment. The significant cases.
Are you confident that we should get in? Does the fact that you're going ahead with the first reading and density committee hearing suggest that you are confident eventually getting the numbers?
I think I would describe it more as hopeful. It's a serious issue and it needs to be addressed.
So in those cases that you're talking about, serious cases that would lead to life imprisonment, drug cases, etc., has the filament been turned off?
Absolutely. Look, the judgment from the Supreme Court on this split decision was it was unlawful. At that point, the police obviously need to follow the law, and they've switched that filming off. Now, we're keen to get those cameras turned back on.
So that includes retrospective some of this footage that has been captured.
Sorry, Michael, what was that?
The footage that has been captured to date, even if this law is retrospective, there's still a doubt that it will be admissible or that it may stand up for.
No, not if we pass the legislation as proposed.
Are you concerned that you've lost a lot of footage that would have been partial to these cases in the interim?
We've unquestionably lost some. I think it's important to understand that this kind of video surveillance footage has been gathered for 15 years. This isn't new technology. It supports a lot of cases. It's not the only form of evidence that the police use. But it's an important part of the picture that they present when they go to court to support the case that they're taking.
So would you would dispute the claim that the police knew that what they were doing was unlawful? Are you saying they thought it was illegal?
Utterly, I'm happy to get you the Crown Law opinion. I mean, it's a matter of public record. But the Solicitor General brought to me, but it's quite clear. The clause absolutely says in the judgment that they've relied on this video surveillance and it is admissible to the court.
Surely the whole Law Commission process and the Search and Surveillance Bill process, that was indicating that there were problems in this area and it wasn't on solid ground.
Yep, but that's the Law Commission's view in 2007. The Court of Appeal's ruling in 2009 was quite clear.
Can I ask you a question on the league versus the rugby?
Yep.
Are the negotiations that are underway between the IRB and the Rugby World Cup 2011, is that for fan zones right across the country or just Auckland?
Auckland, I think.
And any plans to do it for any wider than that?
I haven't been advised of that, but that's always possible, but at this point I've only been advised that it's Auckland.
What are you going to be talking to the Chinese Vice Premier about?
Well, he's a member of the Politburo, so very senior. And, I mean, firstly, it'll be just generally our relationship with China. The areas where we're looking to grow our relationship, which is obviously economically we're looking to advance issues there. It'll be interesting to get an update on how he thinks the Chinese economy is travelling. I mean, that's a critical part of the success, I would argue, of the Australian economy and very directly the New Zealand economy. They are our second largest market now. So clearly there'll be that economic side of things. We may raise other issues with him, but we'll see how that goes.
When you talked about the very dark times in Europe and America, have you received any information that you will have to revise downwards for economic growth and job growth?
Well, nothing other than when I met the Reserve Bank Governor last week, as I do from time to time, the indication that he had at that point was that global growth will be reduced by about half a percent, so I think it's going from 3.7 to 3.2, something like that. So, I mean, generally what he was saying is it will have some impact on New Zealand, but at this point it's not significantly material, so it has an impact. But, I mean, of course, in the end, the United States is a third of the global economy. Europe is a huge trading powerhouse. So if those economies are weaker for longer, that has an impact on New Zealand. The lucky part of the story from New Zealand's perspective is that Asia has been emerging very strongly. It's so far been somewhat immune to what's happening in the United States and Europe. And if they can remain strong, and the indications are that they'll continue to grow between sort of 8 or 9%, then that's very good for New Zealand. I think Mr. English met with, I think this was the Chinese finance minister when he was in Washington, who again was optimistic the Chinese economy would continue to grow at those sort of 8 to 10% levels.
Those numbers that the Reserve Bank Governor referred to, presumably they're on the basis of what's happened already.
Correct.
Do you have any advice or any indication of the impact of, say, a default by Greece on the New Zealand economy?
No, but I mean, I think the issues of... I mean, one thing that the finance minister said to me is that his impression is, unlike late 2008, early 2009, where there was significant stress in the financial markets and the funding markets effectively closed, they closed to New Zealand, they closed to most countries around the world, the situation is far more discerning now. So it's particular institutions and particular countries that are much more badly affected. So there's some impact on liquidity, but it's not wholesale. From New Zealand's point of view, I mean, we borrowed $20 billion last year, a big chunk of that for the Christchurch earthquake. This year it's $5 billion, and we've largely pre-funded ourselves. So we're in a vastly different position. I mean, I still think our corporate balance sheets are much stronger. We're in better shape in terms of commodity prices. So, I mean, we're not immune from what's happening in the world, but most countries would trade their position with New Zealand and take our position any day.
What's your reading on the likelihood of a default? I mean, Mr. English has been there, so presumably he's had the word on the ground. He's come away with a very, very gloomy outlook by the sound of it.
He didn't offer a view on the call yesterday, but I'd say better than 50%.
Better than 50%. Because today...
default. Yep.
Because today there's an interview with Angela Merkel on the wires where she's indicating that once the rescue package, for want of a better word, is put together, the extra funding that the ECB will have available to it, once that's put in place, that she can conceive of a situation where there could be a default.
Where there could be. Yeah. Well, I think it depends on how...
Sorry, the question is that what they're sort of getting ready for?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, because it depends on how you define default, but I mean, they could take a position where there's a huge chunk of bonds that Greece has borrowed, where essentially there's no chance of repayment. There's a freeze in any coupon payments that are made, and a haircut is made to recapitalise those bonds. So, I mean, that is effectively a default.
But your government doesn't think, or English doesn't think there'll be a freeze in wholesale finance?
No. I mean, the markets are still open for us. We borrowed money last week.
But if Greece were to default, that would... seem
to feel
like a bit of a shock.
Well, certainly not good for confidence in the global markets, but as I've said, I mean, it's, the general view he has, it's much more discerning this time.
But with a better than 50% chance of a default, shouldn't you be asking for split rights, or shouldn't Treasury be giving some advice about the impact of music?
Well, we can probably go and get some advice. It'll all be subjective, but I mean, I think the important point is a lot of that's very heavily priced in the market. I mean, the markets are anticipating, I mean, one of the sites I was looking at was anticipating a 90% probability of Greece defaulting, so this isn't new news. I mean, whether it does or doesn't, I'm not the technical expert in those matters these days, but there is a reasonable chance that they will, and we'll see how it goes.
Have you made a decision on soft compulsion?
We haven't. I mean, we're not going to have compulsion in KiwiSaver. That's not our policy for the upcoming election. We've received some advice on the cost of auto-enrolment and the challenges there. We're working our way through it. We haven't made that decision yet.
What's the cost of the $1 billion discount?
We're substantially low on that because not all of the million KiwiSaver, or not all the million New Zealand workers who aren't in KiwiSaver would stay in the scheme. I mean, a reasonable number of people opt out of KiwiSaver because it simply doesn't suit their circumstances. And I mean, that's one of the challenges with compulsion. It's a nice idea, but everyone has their own set of circumstances that they need to manage through. And so it just doesn't suit everybody. And you would be arguably putting more stress on their household than otherwise they might want to happen.
How much would it cost, sorry?
Well, I'm not in a position to release that yet. I mean, it's hundreds of millions, but it's not billions. I'm not concerned by that. I mean, I don't have a view on why it's taking that time. They're independent. They make their call and eventually make a recommendation to ministers. And I haven't been involved in that process other than recognising it's in front of the OIO.
I just wondered if the Chinese deputy premier's visit tomorrow, surprising
quite
comments from the Chinese
embassy
on that issue some weeks ago.
Yep.
You might not expect that to come up.
He might raise it. I'll let you know tomorrow. But
5 months, so.
I tell them we go through a process in New Zealand, and the government has changed recently the Overseas Investment Act to try and give greater clarity to the outcome we want to see, and that we expect people to work their way through that process. It's an open process as much as these things are possible, but they take some time.
5 months, that's not a very good advertisement for enticing foreign investment to New Zealand, is it?
It's a complex position.
What's the nature of the agreement that will be signed?
Don't know all those details right at the stage. The meeting's hosted by Bill English. So.
Back on the economy,
guys.
There's
a few conflicts about the function, but it's an apparently reputable business company in China.
But you need to take that. You need to go and ask the Overseas Investment Office there.
But have they told you it's conflict?
No, they don't brief me on what they're doing.
Well, then how come you think it's conflict?
Well, I just know everything in the area is complex.
Back on the economy,
Yep.
Wayne Swan today, morning, I think, said that the world economy is making it much harder for Australia to hit its target of returning to service by 12-13.
Yep.
Your comment on the situation in New Zealand?
Well, I haven't been advised that there's any need for us to change from our current position, which is 14-15. We've quietly been hopeful that we might get there slightly earlier. That might now mean that's not possible, we're at 14-15 again. I mean, in the end, we've just got to work through the situation as we find ourselves. I mean, one bit of good news, I guess, for New Zealand and Australia at the moment is that the exchange rate's fallen. That's helping our exporters a little bit. Obviously, puts pressure on other areas. But in Australia's case, I mean, they had quite a significant devaluation, actually, in the last few days. I mean, so have we. But, I mean, they were at 1.10, I think, at one point. They're at 97 cents now.
Mr. English, apparently, when he was over in the States, said that, in a general sense, governments spending a bit and perhaps bump up their taxation a little bit more.
Yeah.
Would you say New Zealand's anywhere near coming into that camp, particularly on the taxation side?
Well, I think we're happy with what we're doing on the tax side. I mean, the structure of the tax system and the integrity of the tax system is critically important. I mean, you wouldn't want to play around with that unless you ultimately needed to. And our main concern about the sort of proposals that Labor put up is that they fundamentally alter the integrity of the system. And we think that the bureaucracy involved in administering things like GST or food mean that they rule those policies out. And that was the long-standing view of Labor, and that was Phil Goff's view when he was on the committee that looked at the introduction of GST in New Zealand. I think it's a policy you might want to take to the election when you're behind in the polls, but it's not practically a policy you want to implement. Because if you want to take GST off fruit and vegetables, why wouldn't you take it off meat and milk? And the bureaucracy and administration of that will be enormous. So I don't see us, advocating significant changes in tax. In terms of spending, we are being very careful. I mean, we've cut our new budget spending allowance to $800 million. We've had a number of budget ministers' meetings already, looking at making sure that if we're returned as the government, we hit that target. So we're very focused on that.
Do you stand ready to make any changes in specific ideas for any changes if in terms of custody in Greece or elsewhere in Europe?
Well, the government always has to respond. I mean, when we came in back into 2008, you'll remember when we got the PREFU, just before the election, there was a picture that was had substantially deteriorated from budget time. As soon as we became the government, Treasury felt the numbers were so badly out of date. Within that 6-week period, they presented a new set of books, and ultimately we cancelled the tax cuts that we were proposing to have in 2009. So you always have to respond as government, and as Prime Minister, I've learnt that you do your best to keep your word, but people also expect you to roll with the punches to a certain degree. So there can always be change, but on the information I have today, in good faith, we're promoting the policies we have.
And is anyone asking you where you might roll with those punches? Is there any are you inclined to think you may have to stimulate the economy or further cuts?
I don't think so at the moment. Look, I mean, Q2 growth was a little weaker than the expectation or the consensus from economists, but we've grown in 8 of the last 9 quarters. I mean, Q1 was upgraded. The governor said to me he was pretty confident that Q3 and Q4 would be considerably stronger. We have the domestic stimulus that will come from the Christchurch rebuild, and while it's been pushed slightly further out, it's a very substantial amount of economic activity that will take place. I mean, the exchange rate, you know, if it comes down a bit more, helps us on the competitive side. Commodity prices remain strong. So, I mean, I think, you know, from New Zealand's point of view, we're lucky we're selling things the world wants to buy. And we're in the right part of the world probably for the first time in a long time. So, of course, we're not immune, but we're very focused on getting ourselves back into surplus as fast as we can, paying off debt and making the economy as competitive as we can. In the end, we can only control the things that are within our grasp, and what happens around the rest of the world, you know, we just need to work our way through that. And, you know, as Bill English has said, you know, it's choppy waters at the moment, and the waters are getting choppier.
Do you think there could be a global double dip?
Yeah, look, it's possible, but I don't think that seemed to be the likely outcome. Most people seem to think it will be, it'll be very challenging over the next 24 months, but not necessarily a double-dip recession. But it depends, again, whether it's a technical recession. And global growth is still predicted to be about
3%. Terry, so Bezos, to be back up today, like the people South can be financed.
Yeah.
So
he would do, yes, that's right. Well, I think what it means is the likelihood of the taxpayer being refunded their money is substantially reduced, and any repayment they get will be substantially less than 100 cents in the dollar. How much, I don't know. That's ultimately a matter for receivers, but you know, it's a loss to the New Zealand taxpayer.
Have you had any recent advice about how much the recovery might be from this
no.
year?
I mean, I guess they'll ultimately just be appointing a receiver now that he's been adjudicated bankrupt.
So generally from?
Oh, generally. No, I haven't had the most recent numbers.
What importance do you attach to Imran Khan's views on the situation in Afghanistan?
Well, Pakistan's a player in that part of the world, and they ultimately need to be part of the long-term solution in Afghanistan. But you know, my view of it is that this was a UN-sanctioned operation, and yes, history doesn't tell a very good story in Afghanistan, but history also tells a terrible story of thousands of people that lost their lives in 9/11, and the world had to act, and it acted. I haven't had any advice on that.
On Rugby World Cup,
sure.
I think he's an extremely strong ticket sales, but not able to give us an update on getting closer to that target at this point.
It's getting pretty close. I mean, the Rugby World Cup Minister's Office would be able to give you that. I mean, I asked that question on Saturday night, and the numbers are looking really good.
Under 10 million?
Was close to that, I think, on Saturday night. But I think there's two important points to remember. One is, part of that would include sales that haven't taken place for the final, and I think for the semis they'll be sold out. And the second thing is that the target, don't forget, is actually still below capacity. So one of the important messages we're trying to get through to New Zealanders is just because we hit our target, that's the target of the anticipated loss, it doesn't mean there aren't tickets.
What are the chances of a break even? Because the IAB is still possibly one of the best World Cups.
Yeah, yeah.
Right off the field.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
we've
moved on from that one. Yep.
Yeah,
yeah. Yep.
So what,
by bus and by train and by foot.
So what do you think the chances of a break even are?
Not high. I mean, none of the advice I've had is that we'll break even. But we might do a little bit better than $39 million loss.
Just on the egg part, you're still looking at doing some
Look, in the end, that's in the hands of the voting public what ultimately happens. I mean, all we can do is go to the election booth on November 26th with the rest of New Zealand and see what cards are dealt.
I guess I'm asking, are they worth saving?
Well, look, in the end, we're going to sit down after the election and talk to the parties that we've indicated if they're back in Parliament.
But before the election, are you doing accommodation to ensure that they are?
Well, what we've indicated is we're going to run a primarily party vote campaign in Epsom. That doesn't mean that Epsom voters follow that strategy. That, in the end, is their hand.
Do you ever dive for issue of bringing this up as leader of the National
Party
caucuses or
anything? Not to my recollection, no. Well, it doesn't sound like he's raised it with the ACT caucus either.
Do you get any warning
of
John Boscawen?
He sent me a text on Saturday afternoon, just before the public announcement was made, and I thanked him obviously for his contribution this time as a minister.
Surprising.
I was really surprised. Yeah, I mean, I actually think he's done a good job. I mean, in the time that he's been effectively the parliamentary leader, where we've had more interaction with him, or we had a fair bit when he was a minister, but obviously in recent times, he's pretty straightforward. He's got a good sense of what he can deliver and what he can't. I think it'll be a loss actually for
Ed. What's it say about the party that goes into the
electorate,
none of
it's
sitting in
fees seeking re-election? It's a clean sweep. I'll leave you guys to opine on that. That's what you get paid the big bucks for. Thanks very much. See you later.